All right, well, welcome everybody to our Iowa Total Care monthly call. Today is September 9th, and I'm going to start this one like I have most of our calls here with some updates from IHCA, basically going through some of the informational letters that we've received since our last call. There have been several that have been released. Informational letter 2155 was one that extended cost report dates for fiscal year end 12/31/19, extended those to the end of August, so that has since passed. So I just wanted to touch on that one. So hopefully you were able to take advantage of that if you have a 12/31 year end. Looking through the rest of these informational letters and their applicability to this group, I think that honestly probably covers it. There was another one, 2165, that extended for providers with a 6/30/20 fiscal year end. It gives them an extension on their cost reports, and depending on the provider type, would tell you when that is due. So that's informational letter 2165 for our nursing facilities. Originally that would have been due at the end of November. That's been pushed to 1/31/21. But there are other provider groups that are also listed within that, so I'd encourage you to look at that if you have a 6/30/20 fiscal year end for your company. Another quick look. I don't see any other informational letters that have come out that would be applicable to you guys that you haven't wouldn't have already seen in our bulletin. So with that, I did have a couple questions submitted ahead of time. I don't know if we've had Hillary join us yet or not.
She's on her way, Brennan.
Okay, perfect. And I don't know if this one would go to her or not anyways, but I'm going to start with, this is a question that we've had on a couple calls now, and it's regarding the coinsurance, so Part A and Part B coinsurance. My understanding is that providers have been getting paid on some of these claims when Iowa Total Care doesn't necessarily need to pay for, especially some of the Part A coinsurance. So when this happens, we aren't able to end up including those claims denials or those no pay claims on our Medicare bad debt logs until those are fixed. So is there any updates as to how the Medicare A and B coinsurance processing of claims has been going, or the fix that is in place or going to be in place for them?
She is just about into our meeting, and we have sent her the first question so she can see it, so she's ready to answer. But, yeah, that would be a claims question, Brandon, so we are just going to – gotta love technology here so we can get everybody on board. So
okay. Well, and while we're waiting, I guess I didn't give you the opportunity if Iowa Total Care had any opening remarks that you guys wanted to make either. So
sure. Nope, not a problem. Thanks, Brennan. We do appreciate the opportunity each month to come to your meeting, and appreciate speaking with everyone that has questions that we can work through. I think the last time that we talked, we just had a derecho, and Iowa Total Care was very proud to help out the communities throughout the state of Iowa by donating food and water and helping out where we can. We had various members of our ITC community helping out not only their neighbors but all around the state of Iowa. We've had several conversations with providers that their offices were hit and damaged severely, and we were able to help out with that. So we are a proud leader in Iowa to help not only our members but also our providers. So I look forward to any continued success. And if someone is still having problems from the derecho, we would like to know that as well. I think most folks are back on track from a provider standpoint and their offices. So wanted to share that with you. And I know that we have a lot of projects going through, and I'm sure that Hillary will be able to speak to some of those as we have have some concluding between now and at the end of September. So, Ms. Hillary, I believe you are here, so welcome.
Yes, I finally made it. Sorry.
Thanks for joining us, Hillary.
No problem. Do we want to just start going through the agenda?
So the first one, and you probably have the question in front of you, but we're talking about the Part A and Part B coinsurance, and there has been some, or I know this has been asked in the past, but it continues to still linger in regards to providers receiving some payments that maybe they shouldn't be, and then this affecting their ability to claim on the Medicare bad debt logs when they are. So I don't know if you could touch on that at all, or maybe explain where we're at in the process of getting that fixed.
Yes, so there was a research ticket that we submitted to look into the coinsurance for Medicare Part A and Part B. We are still waiting for some feedback from our corporate partners on some of that. I do know there has been some payments on things that should not be covered, and you will receive a recoup letter for some of those. One of them was the bed holds. I know that was an issue. And also if we see anything from the Medicare Part A, Part B issue, we will be sending out recoup letters for those as well. And then doing a project for the ones that we should have paid either more money or an incorrect denial, and picking up those as well. But we kind of are in a holding pattern waiting for feedback from corporate so that we can get the issue completely fixed and then reprocess those based on the fix. If that makes sense.
Yeah, thanks, Hillary. And regarding some of those recoupments, I have received some recent feedback from some members who, if they've been overpaid for something, and they've sent a check back, they have had times where they are also recouped as well, and then funds are eventually owed back to the facility because it was refunded and then recouped. I guess I'm trying to think through how we can prevent that from happening in the future. And I mean, one area that I thought that we could do to help, you know, because we also need to, if we're overpaid for something, we need to identify it. And we identify it, we need to let the payer know within a certain period of time, and I want to say it's around 60 days to identify overpayments. And I, obviously, I don't want us to not identify. We need to do that. But I don't want it to be recouped two times with a refund check and then an automatic recoupment. I'm trying to think of what the best scenario would be, and could it be as simple as, you know, notifying whether it's their rep if they have an overpayment and then waiting for that to be recouped electronically rather than sending a refund check? Or is that the preferred method? Or I don't know if any of you could talk through that with me.
I think from the claims perspective, that's the preferred method. Just because even if you send a check back in because you identified an issue, we still have to reprocess the claim in the system. So it shows that we had to recoup money from that claim. I know that the checks are going to a lockbox that finance is in control of. So sometimes we don't get that information immediately to get those claims reprocessed. So I think the best course of action from the claim side is to let your rep know, and then we can include them in a recoup project. And once that letter is sent out to you, then it's much easier for us to reprocess those claims. And when we get your money, we know what it's going towards, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. Perfect. That's kind of what I thought, but I didn't know if there was a formal process. I figured there probably was, but I didn't want to suggest something that didn't already have some kind of working solution, I suppose. And if that's notifying them to put it in a recoupment project, I would probably notify through email. Sorry, I just saw Joe Exotic come across the screen there. But I'd notify it through a recoupment project, through email, so that way you have documentation of submitting and notifying of the overpayment, so that way I don't know when or if some kind of a review would be done of overpayments, but then you can at least show that you've submitted it timely. So I'll move on to our next grouping of questions here. And they're surrounding the COVID relief rate. And I know we've had this probably in the last couple calls. And I know I actually have had some providers who have submitted based on some feedback that they received on the call last month. And when they actually did follow the process that was outlined, they never received the additional $300 per day. They just ended up getting it paid out at their normal room and board rate. So no add-on was actually, or no $300 rate increase was added to that claim at all. So I'm just trying to get some additional feedback as to how that looks, or I guess have any claims for the COVID rate relief or relief rate been paid to date? And if so, can you explain to us maybe how?
Yes. No, I don't believe they have been paid out. We did have it updated in our system. However, when it moved to production, we had some issues with it in production. So we will go back and clean up those claims for the COVID relief rate. We've already pulled several of them to get you guys paid for those, and have made that update in our system for that, for the DR condition code. So everything I told you last month is still correct. It's just we had an issue with moving that into production, and we hadn't received any active claims yet. So it was hard to test. I mean, we had to add things to claims in the test system to get it to work. So when we got actual production claims, it didn't work like we thought. but we went back and fixed that, and we are going to reprocess those claims that had that DR code on it.
And then for anyone who maybe wasn't on the call last month, could you explain that process again, or what you would like that to look like? Maybe I kind of have the nuts and bolts of how that should look like on the UB.
Yes. So you're going to use the condition code DR as outlined in the IL. We did ask that you separate the COVID days from the non-COVID days on separate claims, because obviously on a UB that condition code applies to the entire claim. So it'd be impossible to tell which ones were COVID days versus not COVID days. So as long as you're submitting the non-COVID days and COVID days separately, and then using that DR condition code on the COVID days where you're going to get this additional payment, they should process going forward correctly, and we'll go back and reprocess the ones that paid out at just the normal rate.
So, and just to make sure I'm understanding it, so they mm-hmm. could, for a specific month, be submitting three separate claims for an individual in order to capture the $300 rate increase for that?
Unfortunately, yes, because if it's in the middle of the month, then you would have the days prior to the COVID days and then after. Because it's a UB form and the condition code applies to the entire claim, it's impossible to set our system up to do it differently. So we tried to look at other avenues, but we couldn't come up with anything that would actually work. So unfortunately, yes, there could be up to three different claims.
Okay. And they would build that using the same revenue code as they would for the normal room and board, but just that one claim, say in the middle of the month, that had the DR code would flag to add the 300.
Correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This question is, did they need to cancel the claim for the days that they already received payment for at the Medicaid rate, then bill the Medicaid rate plus the 300-day add-on, or how should that flow? So, I mean, does it really need to be canceled, or is it more of just a correction at this point? Would you have three corrected claims if you've already been paid for one claim covering that entire month?
You could have three different corrected claims. If it hasn't been paid out yet, there is a possibility to request that it is voided. Or you can void the original claim. If it has been paid out already, then you would just submit the corrected claim with that DR code on whichever days that applies to. And then we can get those processed.
Okay. And then my understanding is that this can apply to hospice as well. Is there anything different that needs to be done on hospice claims for the room and board pass through than what would need to be done for a nursing facility claim?
For hospice, because typically those claims are billed by the hospice room and board is billed by the hospice agency. I will make sure that they got that configuration for the DR condition code on those claims set up. And I can reply to you by the end of the week, Brandon, so you can let everybody know.
Okay.
But it should be just adding the DR condition code and then using the same revenue codes as you normally do.
Okay, perfect. I think inevitably we will, I don't know, I haven't heard it yet because we haven't really submitted many, but I think that we may end up having some that will receive a timely filing denial, just because it's possibly been several months since that those dates of service were initially billed. Is there any specific process that providers should do? Now, again, like I said, this is not necessarily, I haven't seen this yet, but we think it has in the past when we've corrected older claims. Any process for how they should work through that? Should it just go to their rep or?
So for the timely filing denials, we'll make exceptions for things like this where we didn't have all the information at the time that the program started. So we'll make exceptions when you file those claims, and we do review timely filing denials on check runs so we can catch them before they go out. So we'll specifically look at the hospice and nursing facility claims for timely filing and make sure we catch those. So I think we should be okay. If you do get a couple of them, report them to your provider relations representative so they can pass that information over to us and we can get those reprocessed.
Awesome. One other one that I have here is if we're splitting a claim into multiple, you know, say it is one of those examples of it happens mid-month, will the client participation amount be applied properly to each of those three claims then?
So typically the client participation should be taken out of the first claim that comes in as long as it covers it. Otherwise, mm-hmm. It would go to the next one. So it should come out just like normal on your claims. We can double check into that to make sure as we're seeing these claims go through that they are applying it correctly. So we can watch for that and just make sure that it is working correctly. But it should, based on how the system's set up.
Okay.
So.
Cool. That was what I had as far as pre-submitted questions. We do have some that are in the chat here, so I'll kind of run through these if that's all right. This first one, it actually came to me, so you may not have seen it. You probably haven't seen it, but this question is, I have one resident for our September 19 and October of 19 that was recently recouped, and it's now showing pending. How can I find out when those type of claims will pay? The modifiers on it's S5170 were dropped when the ITC re-entered the claims under a new claim number, and I think that this is for CDAC.
Okay. What was the code number? It was S5125 or S5170 for
5170, yeah.
Okay. Okay. If you send those examples to your rep, we can look at them and look at the original claim, and then we can go ahead and get those priced and get them out of the system. Obviously, we don't want them to deny if it was a keying error on our side. So if you are seeing those, please send them to your rep, and we can take care of those on our end.
Awesome. This next one, SNF room and board billing, the 7/19 to 12/19 double paid claims have been recouped. Thank you. But the reprocessed claims paid at correct rate, did not reprocess to pay, taking out patient liability. How do we get that rectified? So it paid the right rate, but just the CP wasn't removed.
Yep, so we just had our final update to client participation because there was an issue with some date spans. So that is now corrected and we can go back. We are going to be looking at all of the claims to make sure that we're taking out the right amount. And we also get audit files every month where sometimes it changes retroactively. So we have to go back and recoup that client participation amount. So we will be looking at all the institutional claims to make sure that we're taking out the correct amount. And you'll either receive additional payments or recoups based on that and what we see in your claims. So we will be doing that automatically already.
Awesome. This next question, I think, is a home health related question. It says we still have XD modifier denials from December through April that have not paid, and we aren't getting anywhere with our RIF on them. Who do we contact to get some progress made on payments for our claims? And just as a reminder, that XD modifier is what our home health agencies are putting probably in box 80 to indicate that the patient is not homebound, which should make it so they don't have to submit the claim to Medicare because Medicare won't cover that. I guess the question is, who do they contact on getting some resolution for that?
I do know that this is on our project list and it's near the top, which means someone's going to be pulling that project and reprocessing those shortly. So it should be, I would estimate, about 45 days because we'll have to pull the data, go through it, and then it'll take 30 days for the actual project to process. So I would say 45 days from now, you should see payment on those claims.
Thank you. Next one, what if a provider's notified their provider rep, but they're not getting back to them or taking a long time to hear back from them? How do they go about reaching out to someone else at Iowa Total Care?
Brendan, this is Jeannie. We've had this question before, and I will reiterate the same information that they can always contact myself for information. What I want to be sensitive to is that we're working diligently with our claims folks, Hillary's team and such, and we provide the most up-to-date information that we have available. There are times and situations, and Hillary probably can attest to this better than anyone else, that we also work with our corporate team, and we don't always get dates, ETAs, if you will, of when certain things we can't, you know, provide specific dates when some projects are going to be entered and completed because we don't have any control over those at the corporate level. What we can share with you is when we do have local control versus our corporate control over those projects, we have the availability to be able to provide that information because we, in fact, get that from Hillary and her teams. So it's not a situation in most cases that the reps, to my knowledge, have not gotten back to them. It's the information that we have available to share. So my expectations for my field staff is that if they call or email, that they will return a call or email within 48 business hours. So if they are not receiving, you know, a reply acknowledging that they have received the information, you know, they have received their correspondence, I most definitely want to hear about that. And I will put my contact information in the chat here shortly.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeannie.
Of course.
This next question here is it's another home health question. They received a denial for invalid diagnosis stating that the G0299 is a hospice code. That's not a terminal. The primary diagnosis was not terminal. And with hospice, obviously that would need to be the case, but with home health, that would not need to be the case. G0299 is for skilled nursing. And that's a code that probably sounds like is used for both hospice and home health. So how do we, I guess I'm not even sure how it would indicate that it was a hospice submitting the claim unless there was like a hospice bill type on there, I guess. I'm not sure. But how do we ensure that the the claim shows as a home health agency rather than a hospice?
So there are different revenue codes to use for some of the hospice codes. I did just, however, because this was a benefit issue, I did submit another ticket to have that code removed from this benefit so that it won't impact the claims any longer. So you shouldn't see that denial going forward. It's still in configuration, but it's going to be about 2 weeks before it's completed. So they are removing that. So it shouldn't be an issue after 2 weeks from now. So I don't think you'll have problems going forward.
Thanks, Hillary.
But we will go back and reprocess those claims.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah. Thank you. And I guess I'm not sure. I'm definitely no expert in hospice billing for the non-room and board pass-through side, so I guess I have no idea if that's that is a service that is provided to hospice. Although if it's skilled nursing and hospice, I don't know that those necessarily go together. But I guess I'm not sure what if there would be any unintended consequence of removing that from hospice.
Well, they are, hospice requires an authorization, so they validate the diagnosis in that format. So I don't think it will have any unintended consequences on our end. It'll just make it a little bit easier for your claims to process.
Okay, awesome. The next couple questions it looks like are related to the COVID relief rate. Please review the process again, which I don't know if you've already done this during our Q&A, but it sounds like the DR goes in the condition code. There should be separate claims with the condition code, the disaster-related COVID relief rate days on its own claim by itself. So it's possible that you would have three separate claims for a month if that person received those 0 to 10 days of the enhanced rate in the middle of the month. So those would need to be submitted separately. Otherwise, the rest of the billing codes, it sounds like you just bill it the same, but you just put the DR code on the days that would qualify. Is that accurate, Hillary?
Yes, that's accurate.
Awesome. So hopefully that answers some of these. Is there an example of how the COVID DR claim should look? Is there going to be any issues with adjustment claims related to the COVID claims?
There should not be any issues when we are talking about corrected claims or adjusted like via project. I guess I need clarification on that before I answer.
Yeah. Jules, if you could provide a little bit of clarification, that'd be great. The next one, we're adjusting claims being reprocessed at the old rate. Why are adjusted claims being reprocessed at the old rate before the retro rate change? How does that work if the rate has been updated in your system? Any other providers seeing this?
So I know that the rates have been updated, and when we run those claims back through the system, they should automatically price at the new rate unless it's getting lesser of because the amount billed isn't higher. So it should be processing. If you are seeing that, please send them to your provider rep so we can take a look at those claims and see what's going on.
Have they fixed the problem where the claim for different dates in the same month will deny as a duplicate?
So we actually just got this configuration in. We had a couple of issues with it throwing an error code in testing, so it took a little bit longer than we had hoped, but we do now have that configuration in, and we will begin reprocessing any of those claims that were impacted with the where you're billing like a line. Each line has a different day on it. We will go back and look at those claims and reprocess those. And then going forward, they should not hit that same duplicate issue.
So when we are submitting an adjusted claim and breaking one claim down into potentially three, are those all type of bill, the XX7, or ending in 7, with the most recent paid claim referenced on the adjusted claim?
Correct. Yep, so the bill type would have to end in 7 to indicate a corrected claim, and then the old claim number should be put on each one of those.
And then when we're billing for the COVID rate, we don't actually have to, we shouldn't actually add the $300 on, or should we add the $300 on to the rate?
You should add it on to the billed charges because our system automatically defaults to the lesser of. So please do add them on to the billed charge amount.
Okay. So they would say their rate's $200 a day and they want to add this $300. Mm-hmm. You should be submitting a claim for $500 per day.
Correct.
Okay. This next question is on prior authorizations. Is there anything being done to improve the efficiency of prior auth response time for a patient being admitted to home health? They continue to experience some delays with risk of patients not receiving cares needed. There's a lot of history and risk for denial of services to base it on the reported 6 visits to establish cares and not knowing if any other agency has already used those visits. So I think they're referencing those visits at the beginning of a start of care that do not require an authorization. And they're just wondering if there's anything, because they can't verify that, or they don't, it's difficult to verify. So any comments or feedback on prior authorizations for home health?
Brandon, I do know that Di Pecci, who has joined our meeting in previous times, is aware of that situation. And if the providers have any questions, they can always reach out to any of the case managers for discussion regarding that. But I know that they have looked into some of that information. We can also, Tony is always taking copious notes for us during these meetings, and we can forward that on to Di. And we can get back to the individual that requested that information if they're having specific information or having specific problems with that. But I do know that Di has addressed that in previous meetings, but we can certainly address that individually with the person who requested that information.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jeannie.
Sure.
This question, in order to submit for the additional payment, did the resident need to test positive, or can we file for suspected that were quarantined but never tested positive? I think that the person needs to have tested positive, or they could have a pending result and they would be able to bill while they were awaiting the results of that test. But once that test would come back negative, then it would no longer be able to be billed. So most of those tests would have been completed and processed within a certain number of days, very few days, probably a couple, 48 hours or 72 hours possibly before the negative result was in. But if you never actually tested the person, I don't know that it would qualify for this relief rate.
Right, I think the IL specifies that they have to be pending test results. And then if you find out they're negative, then obviously they wouldn't qualify. But if they're positive, then you can continue to bill those days.
Okay. So then, yeah. So if you never tested them, then you would not be able to bill this. Is there any way to get the billing process or how we want this to look for the COVID relief rate, like a written process somehow rather than through this? Obviously, I mean, we have 92 people on this call, varying all different kinds of provider types, but there are people who are not on this call that would need this kind of guidance. Is there anything from Iowa Total Care that we could give them explaining how they could build this added rate?
We can do a communication that I can send to Jeannie. Jeannie, I don't know if you want to respond as well.
If we do that, Brandon, it has to go through IME and we have to get approval for that. So it won't be soon.
I do have a request out to IME. I guess I'll also throw that out there, requesting specific claims billing guidance on how it should look. I think what's difficult probably for IME to be able to prepare that is both MCOs, it sounds like, are handling it a little bit differently. So there would obviously need to be some kind of a back and forth between IME and the MCO to be able to know what that specific guidance is. So
yeah, it'd almost be useful to see maybe if we could collaborate between the two MCOs and IME to get one informational letter out. If it's ITC, it's this. If it's Amerigroup, it's this. If it's IME, it's this, fee-for-service folks. So that is something, too, that I can take back. But I would say that your involvement on that would help push that quicker.
Okay.
And Brandon, I do know that they sent us, IME sent us some Q&A questions to answer a while ago. I'm not sure where they posted it on their website. But it does, I think, for both MCOs outline kind of the process that we put into place. But of course, we'll answer anything additional that will help. As long as it's approved by IME, we can get it out to everyone.
Okay. I will work on that some more. So this provider is still getting denials for room and board after entering, as they were told, 10 claims in pending status. The provider rep and I are beyond what to do. I'm not sure what kind of, if that's just normal room and board claims or if we're talking the COVID relief rate claims on that. Maybe provide us a little bit more on that if you wouldn't mind. Comment about acknowledging an email that's being received. I know you touched on that, Jeannie.
And I did put my contact information in there, Brandon, and I also requested that if there are individuals that have not received information back from their representatives to please forward me those emails and let me know. You know, we also have with COVID and things like that, there was a period of time where our folks, you know, were working out of new locations. So I just want to put that caveat in there that we were working out of different locations, and some folks actually ended up coming here in the Des Moines office into the office, which we had to follow our strict COVID guidelines for being in the office. And a lot of folks were without power, especially in our Cedar Rapids eastern area for almost 2 weeks. So if it was during that time, I would hope that you would have the understanding that we were working as best as we could during that time frame. All of our staff are back up and working in their homes now, though.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeannie. This question, what does global fee paid mean?
So typically it would be like a ancillary service that isn't payable in addition to like room and board, for example. I do know there's some manual processing of some claims and they may have used a different EX code than you're used to, which is probably why you're seeing that instead of just ancillary charges not separately payable.
All right. Just a comment about auths taking a couple weeks. Will Iowa Total Care pay for COVID testing similar to private insurance?
So we do cover COVID testing, and we actually pull those out separately to make sure that they get paid and covered. So we definitely do cover the COVID testing.
Do you have that informational letter number?
I think that was in reference to the additional payment for nursing facilities.
I think that's 2146 would be the informational letter for that. Had a follow-up on room and someone having that question about room and board claims just sitting out there as pending. It is on hospice room and board claims that they're having issues getting paid for.
Yes. So we are processing those right now. The issue that we're having with hospice claims and getting them paid quickly is that right now it is a manual process because they are submitted by the hospice agency, but paid based on the nursing facility NPI. On the hospice association call, we did mention that if you're billing those claims for room and board in particular, that you make sure that you're putting the NPI in box 80 without any words or additional letters in there, just the NPI number, because we're working on a process to be able to automate those claims and get them paid faster. And we need it without any additional letters or numbers in that box in order to be able to do that. The normal hospice claims that are like based in the home should be processing as normal, but if that's what you're referring to, then please send those to your provider rep so we can see what's going on with those particular claims. And we'll take a look and try to get the payments out to you as fast as we can.
Thank you. And then this last question that we have in the chat so far is, they're being asked to send a physician signed plan of care for prior auth, which is not reasonable in delaying our process further. Holly, are you referring to a new person to home care? Or are you referring to a recert? I do know on recert that the previous cert period, you can submit that signed plan of care, or you can submit the new plan of care unsigned. That's the guidance that I've seen on the prior authorization. I have not seen anything until this comment saying that they need the new one signed. That would be a change from previous processes. And I know that Di's not on the call here.
Brandon, you know what I can do. If we are beginning to have some more authorization questions, I can certainly see if Di is available next month to attend. She is more than always willing to join the calls. And then if you have specific questions ahead of time, if you could get those to me a couple days ahead of time, we can certainly get those to Di and be ready for the call for next month. How does that sound?
I think that would be worth exploring having her on the call with us as well. And then I guess even in the meantime, I can send you the guidance that I've received previous on home health authorization guidelines, and we can maybe verify that that's still the process that we want providers to be following, whether it be for new members needing an auth or research for existing members, and just to verify that we're kind of all on the same page. Because it sounds like there may be some changes from what I've seen in previous guidance.
Yeah, so we'll take those two questions that have been presented to us, the one previous and this particular one, and we can, if you want to capture those, and then I can send those to Di, and then I will then forward her responses back to you. Does that work okay?
That works. That works for me.
Great. Thanks, Brandon.
Yep. Okay. ITC comment saying they pay for COVID testing. Does that include those with only Medicaid as a payer?
Yes, it does.
Okay. Well, seeing no more questions in the chat or my email, I want to thank our reps from Iowa Total Care, Jeannie, Tony, and Hillary for joining us today again this month. We'll be doing this again next month on the second Wednesday, which is, looks like October 14th. So join us for that. And please continue to submit your questions ahead of time. That ensures that everyone from Iowa Total Care that would be applicable to the questions being asked could be on the call then, so that way we can get your questions answered. But thanks again, you three, for joining us this month. And we look forward to chatting with you again next month and throughout the intermittent time, I suppose, too. So.
Thank you, Brandon.
All right. Thanks, all.
All right.
Thank you.